The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on Newstalk.
Pat McDonough, you weren't scribbling the number down there, no? Yeah, you must have your entry in already.
My entry in already, you're dead right.
Cute businessman like you would have your entry in early. Pat is with me, of course, well known to many of you as the CEO of Supermax. He's the owner of the Kaleshin Hotel, part of the hotel group, and the Portlaoise Plaza as well, up the other side of town, if I'll describe it that way. I mean, between the hotel here, Pat, and the plaza, you're heavily invested in this part of the country. Why so? What's the sell here?
Yeah, well, Portlaoise has been very good to us, and I hope we've been very good to Portlaoise. We've over 400 employees across the board here. But Portlaoise as a town is very well located, very centrally located across in Ireland, and very easy accessible with good motorways and roads into it. So that in itself makes it very attractive for meetings for different groups across the country. And here in the hotel, you can see from all the different meetings that we have throughout the year that it's Portlaoise generally is very well located. So, and then for sporting events or concerts, electric picnic or the ploughing championships, very easy accessible for farmers or whatever, or people going to the concerts, etc. So yeah, and because it's located just less than an hour out of Dublin, it has become very prominent insofar as if Dublin is busy and the cost of hotels are expensive, people are moving out a bit. So that's probably the reason for it. But yeah, I think it's a county that's very well managed. You know, the councillors and that do a very good job here, and they're promoting the Leash very well, whether it's for tourism or for business or whatever. So again, those are the main reasons. But it's an easy commuter town as well.
Yeah, it's one of the fastest growing towns in Ireland as well. And we were chatting a little bit earlier. We had different people here from the town, including the Chamber of Commerce, and they talked about the different employers moving into the region. I mean, it was very much a commuter town. You know, people moved here from Dublin so that they could commute back to work. Probably a little bit less of that. It's still happening, still happens a lot. But, you know, with working from home and remote working, they're spending more time here, spending more money then in the local economy.
Yeah, it's there's over 500 jobs being created out in the business park out beside us at the Portlaoise Plaza. And Glanbia have already opened, and they're producing cheese not alone for this country, but right through Europe. And again, there are many other businesses just ready to go in there and have agreed to go in there over the next couple of months and years. And that's going to create, in excess of 500 jobs. So that in itself will, as I say, create a new environment, and it'll save people from commuting to Dublin. Because, you know, one of my suggestions at an early stage was to create an inland port in Portlaoise, because there's great accessibility, there's good railway system to Dublin port, and why not, as I say, distribute the containers from Dublin port to Portlaoise and then redistribute them there, whatever part of the country they want to go to. So, yeah, it would alleviate the traffic problem in Dublin, and I think it would give a new kind of an impetus to Portlaoise is the Midland town.
So I mentioned we're in the Kaleshin, of course, and we've been talking about hotels a bit on the show recently. I guess there was accusations of kind of price gouging. It was the story a few weeks ago. More recently, I suppose the issue has been the reliance by the state on hotels to accommodate Ukrainian refugees, and the fear that some have in the industry that this is going to become a long-term plan, that the government is really struggling to know what to do with the sheer numbers coming to the country. I mean, how do you take the temperature of the industry at the moment?
Well, the customer always gives you the temperature. And, you know, when you're dealing with customers on a day-to-day basis, you can listen and hear what they say. Dublin has probably become very pricey in relation to hotels, but the rest of the country isn't so much that way. And there's still very good value around the Midlands and around rural hotels around the country. And even in some of the traditional tourist areas, as I said, there's still quite very good value actually to be got, because, you know, let's be honest with you, there is the big season for tourism. A lot of people have gone abroad probably this year, and other places have become kind of expensive, so there is still good value to be got.
And in terms of the accommodation then of refugees, is that something you worry about? That what was, I suppose, proposed to hotel owners and hotel groups initially as kind of a short-term thing may become an
Yeah, yes, as and some hotels have taken up the offer on in relation to the refugees. And look, we had a small with about, you know, 10 or 12 rooms here at an earlier stage allocated to them as well. But as I say, it's going to, I mean, there's a lot of convents and there's a lot of old secondary schools, boarding schools that have been done up, and now the there's more accommodation, or if it's not available yet, will become available. As I say, in the local priest's house in Kilmer Daly has even converted to it. So there's lots of places that are getting converted for Ukrainian accommodation. I think that will be relieve the pressure on hotels.
Okay, so you're confident that the plans that some have suggested to government, the use of those kind of old institutions, that will relieve the pressure for the hospitality industry.
Need for hotels on an ongoing just to alleviate the impact of the refugees when they come in. But I'd say as time goes on, they'll be able to reallocate them to different areas around the country.
What's the situation with staffing then in the industry at the moment? That's another kind of part of the hospitality industry we've talked about, where challenges seem to exist.
Well, challenges did very much exist and still exist to a degree. But we would have noticed actually in the last couple of weeks that there has been an increase in the applications for work.
Right.
Why, I'm not sure, because maybe it was that the COVID payments have kind of run dry or whatever, and I'm not quite sure, as I say. And maybe it is that people now realise, you know, we're over the COVID situation, let's get back to work again. But for whatever reason, as I say, in the last couple of weeks, I would have seen a lot more here before. But it is still a problem because the number of chefs that are applying are still very limited. A lot of people have changed direction, they've changed lifestyle, they've maybe taken a different profession or started a different profession, and that's the way it is. So, as I say, you know, it is challenging all the time, but it is going to work itself out over the next year or two.
Well, it's good. It's good to hear you strike such a positive note about the different challenges. It has to be said, Pat. Like, you are optimistic.
Oh yeah, I'm optimistic because, you know, it took the COVID had a different effect on some people. Some people internalized it and just got so much afraid of it that they were nearly afraid to go out. Mm. Other people then kind of took it in their stride. Younger people especially, and then the middle group kind of. Yeah, they did adhere to the regulations, etc., and they are very conscious of it, but they are learning to live with it, and just life has to move on.
Well, let me ask you then about the other thing that we talk an awful lot on the show about at the moment, which is the cost of living and the cost of doing business, and the fears that some of your, you know, colleagues in industry would have going into the winter in particular, that, you know, bills are beginning to mount up. Inevitably, some have had to pass the costs on to customers. You know, they tried to absorb it as much as they could, but ultimately you've got to pass it on when it is sustained. How are you feeling that?
Look, as I say, inflation, let's say, is around 10%. Personally, I believe is a bit higher than that, maybe 12 to somewhere between 12 and 15%. Cost of power, cost of electricity has gone through the roof. We were paying 14.9 a unit last year. This year, we're paying 33 cents a unit. So that's over doubled. Cost of food costs have gone up through the roof. Cost of paper costs, cost of labour, etc. So there are huge costs. What I would be concerned with would be, though, disposable income is going to get tight into the autumn and winter. Mm. And that's going to have its own effect because, you know, you relate those extra costs to the household, and then there's going to be less and less disposable income. I'm sure you've seen your electricity bill double probably as well in the last...
You don't want to get me started talking about it, Pat.
But that's the way it is. And, like, you look at the cost of fuel, even though I know petrol and diesel have come down about 10 cents in the last two to 3 weeks. So, but as I said, it's still very high. And food is going to continue to grow. Like, cost of beef to ourselves has gone up nearly 40%. Likewise with chicken and likewise with other food products. So, yeah, there is going to be, a challenge for the winter. But look, everybody has to get through it. We have to adapt to the new situation and deal with it. And it will... level itself out. I would be concerned, though, in one sense, that there could be a little bit of a scarcity of food towards the end of the winter, up towards the December, etc., because just the way things are with the war in Ukraine, etc., it has a massive knock-on effect right across the whole world, really.
It's something we really haven't seen here. Is people's shopping has increased, but nothing like, you know, petrol or energy has gone up. And if we've got food price inflation at the level we had energy price inflation, I mean, people will really feel that. You know, you can absorb some of that pain, you know, as long as you can put food on the table. We're into a whole different ball game if there's food shortages.
Absolutely. I would be recommending people to buy a bit of long life food earlier on, so that the
really
some things do
think people should stock up a little bit.
I do honestly think that, because, you know, we're all talking about, you know, as I say, you know, reducing carbon gases, etc. As I say, with the scarcity of food worldwide, because you look at it now, price of say cooking oil has nearly doubled in the last 6 months, because most of it comes from the sunflower in Ukraine that's grown in Ukraine for the most part, and rapeseed, etc. So that has doubled. Now, that's not been produced in a lot of cases this year because farmers are pretty much kind of at a standstill out there. And then the cost of fertilizer for farmers didn't fertilize this year. So I think you'll have a lowering of the fruit productivity in this country as well. For the autumn. So, as I say, I can't predict what's happened, but I'm just assessing it in my own way.
Yeah, which is, look, it's a worrying prospect, and it's one I'm sure that we'll come back to on the show as well. In terms of how that inflation is handled, you know, the kind of perceived wisdom seems to be two things need to happen. One is the European Central Bank has to increase interest rates. They did that. The other is that the government need to avoid the kind of political temptation to chase inflation with increasing wages. There's less confidence that will happen. You know, we've talked about public sector workers kind of going kind of en masse on strike in the autumn if wage increases are not to their liking. What's your view on that?
Well, look, as I say, I'm not really an economist, so I can't really say what's going to happen, but people have to live, so they have to get a decent wage to keep them. Cost of accommodation is again going through the roof. So, what I would notice is, and this is something that I find interesting, the only reason the cost of fuel has gone down in the last couple of weeks is because there was less demand worldwide for it. So the producers of fuel then decided, look, we're losing 10% of sales here, so we'll have to reduce our price. And it was the same thing with fertilizer for farmers. Farmers couldn't afford to spend in some cases money on fertilizer, so they stopped buying it. And yet, you know, two months later, cost of fertilizer dropped by about 20%. So the customer will always dictate what's going to happen, and where they walk with their feet or go into a business or not go into a business, that will dictate what's going to happen. And you know, as I say, inflation is a thing that's is happening now. I think we're over the worst of it. Level out as time goes on.
Always good to hear Pat on the show, says one listener on 53106. Fair play to him for getting out there, doing the hard graft and putting in every ounce of his life into it. Pat, before I let you go, one of your great rivals, I won't name them in your presence, has hiked the price of their food for the first time in 14 years today. A certain hamburger chain, Supermax, will you be following suit?
I was wondering when it was going to happen, because they have to have the same costs as we have, and we had a little increase. I don't foresee anyone for the next at least 6 months, if not longer, because, as I say, everything is relative. So it's what the customer can afford to pay and for the quality they get.
The price of your Mighty Mac meal is safe for now.
Safe for the moment anyway.
Pat, listen, an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million for joining us on the show. Pat McDonough, live from the Collection Hotel in Portlaoise. Stay with us. Back in a moment.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.